What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, how you can win with personal finance. This week, our guests are Jared Plummer. He is in North Carolina. He is a, it's ASO Med, right? Or is it
ACO. You call it whatever you want, though. I can't sell to you. That's fine.
All right, so that's going to be part of his story. He's going to kind of explain some of that as we talk about how he's now currently winning with personal finance. And then joining me again is Sean Reedy out of Rice University. So I am your host, Jeremy Jackson. Sitting right beside me, I've got
Kevin,
Jaylene,
Liz,
Ben,
Jose.
And Jose is going to start us off with our first question for you, Jared, in just a second. But you can you can join our conversation at sportsmedicinebroadcast.com using hashtag DSMB on Twitter. But this episode is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/personalfinance. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/personalfinance. So the links to all the ways you can connect with us and the show notes and the things we talk about should be on the website. Again, there at sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/personalfinance. Without much further ado, Jose, start us off.
Mr. Plummer, would you rather live in a world filled with morons, but you're the genius, or in a world filled with geniuses, but you're the moron?
I got that question for an interview when I took a position at Southeastern Louisiana University, and I still don't have the right answer. I like to think currently I am probably the moron in the group, so... I think I'd rather have everyone else be geniuses, and hopefully I can surround myself with the geniuses so that even though I'm the moron, I can still be successful.
All right, fair enough. Sean, what do you think?
I would probably go the same route, because I would like to probably pick up from people, learn from people, try and be, it's one thing to always teach, but if you're able to gather information and get information, I think that would be probably better.
All right, so Jared, we're going to talk about your athletic training story. Did you get that job? You said it was Southeastern Louisiana that you had that interview question?
As a graduate school, and yes, I did. I think that's the reason why I knocked their pants off with that answer. To be honest, actually, one of my other questions, and I wish I could make this up, this is entirely true, was if you could be a Disney character, which one would you be? And you'd be surprised. I actually have gotten that question from a couple of different places. So I'm not saying that's the reason I got it for sure, but it was certainly a strong running as the top answer, I'd like to say. But yeah, I did. I ended up going to graduate school at Southeastern Louisiana, mainly based on that question. And sorry. So yes, to answer your question, you got your headset on. Yes, that's the reason why I got the job.
All right. Well, then tell me a little bit more about your athletic training story.
Yeah, sure. So I'm an Eastern North Carolina guy. I'm from Edenton, North Carolina, which is Northeastern North Carolina. I went to undergrad at East Carolina University. Had an opportunity to go down to graduate school at Southeastern Louisiana University, work with primarily baseball. And then my first job out of college was working with baseball primarily at University of Maryland. I worked with football and lacrosse some as well. And then from there, worked at North Atlantic University for a few years, working with football only. And then had an opportunity to run up to Ole Miss. So I was there for a number of years. And then about 4 years ago or so, my mom had a health issue that felt like it was the correct decision to move back closer to home. So I started working for a company called ACO Med Supply, who are the exclusive distributors for Don Dore Orthopedics in North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, and a few other little portions of Georgia. And so I'm now basically a ACO Med Supply rep. I'm a sales guy, the guy I used to always joke about. But I'm still an athletic trainer, still get to see patients all the time. It's certainly different than my athletes I was used to, but it's still an opportunity to still strive and in a relatively non-traditional setting as an athletic trainer.
Gotcha. All right. So how long did you say you've been with ACO?
ACO is about 4 years. Actually, just had my four-year anniversary, I guess. Haven't been fired yet, so I guess we're doing all right.
All right. So on our last episode, we talked with Sean about FLSA and the changes that are going to be coming and how so many colleges and universities are, their athletic trainers are underneath that $48,000 threshold. And so you just listed off, I think, three or four different universities that you worked for. So why don't you tell me a little bit about your financial situation when you were working in those universities?
Yeah. So for starters, I know majority of my former coworkers I work with are actually making, in some instances, substantially more money as a high school athletic trainer than as a college athletic trainer. You know, when I was a junior in undergrad, I remember a little assignment where we were asked to where do you see yourself in 10 years? What is your goal? And my goal, I always, literally probably from high school, I wanted to work SEC or ACC baseball or football. That's what I wanted to do. I was around athletics my whole life, and I thought that working at that level, you know, I'm in ACC land around here. Now everybody knows ACC basketball around here. That's kind of what you do. And then, of course, SEC football from the Southeast, that's what you wanted to do. So to answer your question, I felt like that I could be successful financially and also, you know, with my job as a whole, as an athletic trainer working in those settings. And what I found out very quickly was there is not necessarily that much money, not necessarily, actually not at all, in many of those settings. So financially, my parents love them to death, but they're retired school teachers. So they ain't got that much money. Of course, my mom just passed away about a year ago, and she was an English teacher. She would not appreciate that. Ain't got none. But of course, being Eastern North Carolina, that's the way we talk. So I had to actually take out quite a large sum of student loans. And I did get offered a grad assistant position at Southeastern Louisiana. Did pay for my room, my tuition and books. But that also left a pretty good chunk that I felt like I needed a little bit more to cover my living expenses. So, you know, with not having the ability to really have a job other than, you know, be an athletic trainer, in grad school, I accumulated probably in the $40,000 range of student loan debt. It's been, you know, weighing over me ever since then. So once I left there, I had an opportunity to go to, when I was in Maryland, it was an intern position. It was considered an assistant athletic trainer position, but it was truly an intern position. So we got paid out. I don't recall exactly what the pay was, but it was enough to make ends meet, but that was about it. I ended up rooming with three girls, with two other girls, there's three of us total, all athletic trainers at Maryland. We did the best we could, saving money and all. And when I my first real job was at Florida Atlantic University, that was making in the mid 30s. I appreciate the opportunity there. Man, I love the people down there and all. South Florida is difficult to live off of with mid to high $30,000 range, as you can probably imagine. I didn't actually get real money until I got to Ole Miss, but that was still in the 40s. Now there was incentives associated with that, with gear and some other aspects. We had a Nike allowance and all that allowed us to get purchase clothes. That was a couple thousand dollars usually a year, and donors would from time to time, you know, maybe put money in at Christmas, the stockings. Sorry. So sometimes you have donors that would, you know, throw $100 here or there. But other than that, you know, it was a grind financially speaking. When you have a $40,000 student loan debt on top of your regular bills and everything, while, you know, not making the money that I saw in my head, you know, when I was leaving undergrad. So it was difficult, but you had to learn how to manage, or it's going to manage you.
All right. And then when you said you got to Ole Miss, you said, so somewhere around $40,000 you're making.
Oh, at Ole Miss, it was in the high 40s, 540. Probably 45.
All right, so you're looking at $40,000 in student debt from Southeastern Louisiana, trying to pay that off with, say, $50,000. So we're going to, you know, go on the high end. Say you were making $50,000 at Ole Miss.
Sure.
That's, if you were going to pay that off in 2 years, that means that you're probably pulling in, just say, $40,000 off of 50. So that'd be, you'd be living on $15,000 a year.
Yeah. It's tough to do, but you know, you've got to learn to prioritize and read up on books and learn. And as Sean mentioned earlier, you know, learning. I want to learn from the people around me. You know, taking that analogy from there, the first question I believe Jose presented. If we can, if you learn from other people and learn from their mistakes, but at the same time learn from what they're winning at, I think that's how you make it and ultimately strive to be an athletic trainer in the setting and with the finances that you're currently making with your bills. I mean, if you want, I can jump right into kind of how I did it.
All right, let's do it.
All right. So, so there's a gentleman named Dave Ramsey who I'd be willing to say some of his books and some of his podcasts and whatnot have changed my life. I legitimately mean that. He has a book called The Total Money Makeover, which I literally did. I found it wasn't hard. It's literally sitting right on my bookshelf in my living room. I read his book and it changed my life. It taught me how to prioritize. It taught me how to have what he calls gazelle intensity. When a lion's being chased by a gazelle, the gazelle does every single thing possible. He's scratching the claws and goes side to side. He doesn't run straight ahead. He's just going 100 miles an hour left and right to try to get away from the lion, and the lion is the debt. So to learn how to manage your finances and attack that debt is ultimately, you know, what we had, you know, what I had to do. So first things first, I had to learn to budget. That's a horrible word that everybody needs to learn. And I think as athletic trainers, it's easy to go from, you know, you have a road trip and, you know, you get home at 10 o'clock at night and you gotta grab something to eat and you're going to run to McDonald's on the drive home. Let me just grab something, $6 or $8. You know, it's not really that big a deal, but, you know, let's say or during lunchtime, you grab, you know, a $10 lunch. It's not that big a deal, but when you do $10 a day times 5 meals a week, that's $50. You extrapolate that times 4, you know, now you're spending $200. Now you're spending $2,400 in a year. That's just on lunch. And if you're only making, you said before, you're only bringing home 15 grand or so as your, you know, disposable income. Not a lot of money, you know, you're there's not a lot of money left over, and you're only doing it just from eating lunch. So there's another guy called David Bach who has got a great book called Finish Rich. He also has another one called Automatic Millionaire. Shockingly enough, I actually do enjoy reading, which is weird because I hated it in college. I hated it even more growing up. But he's got something called the Laissez Factor, in that he used the analogy or the example of an average Starbucks was costing at the time $4. A latte was $4. And if you did that $4, you know, a day times 5 days a week, that's 20 bucks a week, $80 a month. May not seem significant, but all those little $5, all those little trips to the grocery store, excuse me, trips to the convenience store to grab the Mountain Dew and Snickers, that's my undoing personally. It's kind of what gets me going. But those little things add up. That little latte factor equals up. He used the example, and actually I wrote this down. $10 a day for lunch, $50 a week, that equals $2,400 a year. If you were to take just that $2,400 and invest it in some sort of a low, even a mild returning annuity at 8%, in 40 years, that's 60 grand. So just that 1 year's worth of lunch at $2,400, you can invest that. That's going to actually, you're investing, you're divesting, I guess, divesting 60 grand, you know, in your lifetime. So what I did, I started taking a budget. I went through my, and I encourage everyone to do this, go through your bank account at the, you know, for 1 month and look at every single thing you buy and put it into categories, whether it be your housing allowance or your utilities or your gas, your food. There's a number of different things, including, you know, food and entertainment. And even if you need to save for a car, you know, put every single thing you spent and then take a look at it and figure out exactly how much you're spending and wasting. I've been doing the Ramsey's debt snowball and his plan for a number of years. And even I go back every couple months and go back and look to see what I've spent money on. And I just noticed just about a year ago, I was wasting $200 a month because I was going on Wednesday nights. And going to Bonefish Grill. Sounds stupid, not that big a deal, but I mean, bang bang shrimp, you know, for is awesome on Wednesdays. But those little things, just that and one other thing, it equals like $200 a month. So you kind of have to refocus yourself. So I think the biggest issue is the inability or the not wanting to budget. Ramsey kind of has this the thought process, you know, credit cards are kind of the devil. And if you can, a lot of people use credit cards, I believe, as like an emergency. I got an emergency, I need to put on a credit card because I don't have the cash. So his baby step number one is create an emergency fund. And if you can scrounge everything up, sell everything you have. If you have kids, you should be selling everything to the point where your kids think they're the next ones to be put on the auction block. But do everything you can to scrape up that first $1,000. I personally did a yard sale, put a yard sale and sold some furniture that frankly looked horrendous in the house. Put it all together, sold some stuff on eBay. And then I made around $500 or $600 within the first couple of weeks. And then I just worked real hard to just get $1,000. I literally sat that $1,000 off to the side. It should not take you long at all to accumulate $1,000 if you're really going 100 miles an hour at it. But if it takes a few months to do it, that's fine. You're taking this, you know, that's your first baby step. And think of it, if in theory, there's not much that costs over $1,000 at any one time where you need it, like a quick cash. You know, if your brakes go out, you know, that's a couple $100. If you blow a tire, that's maybe $100. There's not that much that you need that's over $1,000. I think if we can get in the habit of just having $1,000 off to the side, that is literally for emergency. Of course, you got to learn what is an emergency. I think it's easy for anyone to think I really need to go on this vacation. It's not an emergency. Oh, I got stress relief. I'm so stressed. I need to go on vacation. $1,000 is not used for that emergency. It's for, you know, you having the tooth gets knocked out, or you break your leg or something. You got to go to the hospital or whatnot. You don't have to worry about going to a credit card. You can go straight out and use your emergency fund. You okay with me jumping down these baby steps, Jeremy?
Sure. Sean, do you have any experience with Dave Ramsey, or what's your your debt-free situation?
It's kind of funny that talking about your background, because mine is such extremely similar. I mean, I went to undergrad, you know, came out of undergrad with some student loans, went to grad school, went to a Southland school, went to Texas State, kind of the same thing, came out basically in about the same situation, went on, worked at a junior college, did something similar. And I think, I feel like right now I'm just getting my bearings on my financial situation. But part of it is probably honestly because I have had to listen to my girlfriend and the Dave Ramsey talks over and over, and talking about the snowball and paying off your what loan you have, that's your first loan, that's like the least amount, and then going on to that next one and that next one. So probably honestly, if you would have asked me that question 2 months ago, I would have known so little. But since she has gotten so much onto that and started, she's read, I think, 3 or 4 of the books now. I don't even know how many she's got. But, and it's kind of amazing how many of us as athletic trainers go into that, especially those of us that want to go into college and want and have our heart set that, you know, we're not going to work at a high school. We're going to, which by no means saying that there's anything wrong with that, because that's it works for a lot of people, but there's a lot better expense there. There's a lot better payment there. Me personally, I wanted to go into college, wanted to be in the college setting, and that's kind of the exact path that I took. And that path that I took ended me in a very similar situation, 40-some thousand in debt. My first job, very similar price point when I worked in the junior college, and then coming back and getting into the college setting, or to the Division I setting, I came back and I kind of, you know, moved up a little bit, still under that FLSA like we talked about last week. But
all right, so Jared, I'm going to ask you in just a second to come back and finish going through those steps. But Sean and then Jared, what step are you on right now? Me, I am currently, we're working towards getting our 15%, so we're not at that level yet. With health insurance costs, it keeps getting tougher and tougher to get to the 15% investing. And so we're on baby step 4, which I think is the next one you're about to mention. But Sean, where are you at as far as the Dave Ramsey baby steps?
I'm not as familiar, honestly, but I'm probably right there in those first steps, you know, trying to get to a point where now I have an understanding of my monthly debt and what I'm paying out and getting and developing that. I've sat down several times with her and we've talked about what my debt is, what my student loans are, where my things are going, my truck payment, my stuff like that. And that's kind of where we've started putting those to a, this is the one that you need to get off first. This is the one that you need to go towards second. This is the one third and whatnot.
All right. So you're still pre-baby step 1.
Yes, basically. Okay. I am baby.
All right, Jared.
Well, baby. I encourage you try to figure out how to get that first grand. It's hard. I mean, it can be hard to do. You got to focus on it. But yeah, I think that's, to me, getting the first step is difficult because you got to change your mentality, and it's hard to do. It's easy just to go and get, you know, it's easy just to do what you've been doing and think that you deserve it. You know, I've worked my tail off to through undergrad and grad school and as an intern, and then, you know, as an assistant athletic trainer and working yourself up. But I deserve to get this or that, but it can be difficult. So personally, and I think majority of people, it takes the longest to get through your debt snowball. I'm currently still in the debt snowball. So that's baby step two. I'm incredibly envious, Jeremy, that you're already at step four, but that's okay. I'll get there. I'm following your lead. I was married up until just recently. Between my wife and I, we had around $70,000 in debt, whether it be a car payment or credit cards or obviously a little bit more of that was on my end, around $40,000. And she had, you know, a little less than that. But combined, she and I were able to pay off to the tune of, you know, almost $50,000 in about 3.5 years. And it has incredible focus in order to make that happen. I know, Jeremy, you had incredible numbers that you guys were able to save and pay off, which is absolutely ridiculous. But basically the way the debt snowball works is you list, and Sean mentioned it, you actually list all of your debts from the smallest total amount to the largest. So let's say you have a $400 express bill or balance, and you've got a $700 Visa, and then you've got a car payment that's maybe $12,000, and you have $30,000 for the student loan debt. You don't even include your house, if assuming you own a house. But you put everything in order based on the smallest balance. And what you're going to do, you're going to make a minimum payment on every single payment except for the first one. So the first thing we're going to do, baby step one, set up to get a $1,000 emergency fund. You do that while you're making minimum payments on everything. Get that $1,000 taken care of. And then baby step two, your debt snowball. So you list them all. You make minimum payments on every single thing except for the smallest balance. And the reason they use the snowball, it's actually a great example, is as you pay off the first one, then the money that you were spending on that one then goes to the second debt, which then goes to the third debt. And we got to the point where, to be honest, I mean, we were putting $2,500 a month on a student loan debt. That's how, I mean, and when you get to that point, you're knocking debt out, and it's exciting just to see that balance decrease, and you're realizing how much you're putting towards your principal versus how much you're putting towards interest. It's eye-opening to me. It was really exciting. Personally, how I do it.
Let me jump in real quick. And March of 2010 was the month that we paid off our last debt. In that month, we paid off, it was over $5,000 because we were doing the snowball, and we've been tightening down the budget. And then that month where you, like you said, over $2,500, it's amazing when you have a plan what you can do. But March of 2010, we finally paid off the school loans for Sarah, and then we were completely debt free and expecting our son in just a few months. So it is definitely a plan that works. So go ahead and continue there, Jared.
How freeing is that, knowing that you have a kid that's about to be born and you know you don't have that burden of your head? I just couldn't imagine.
That was the biggest deal. Is Sarah and I, when we, you know, discuss marriage, discuss kids, we, you know, she wanted to stay home. She wanted to be at home with the kids, with the family. And so we didn't really have a plan. We were just like, you know, we could afford it. We can do whatever, that kind of thing. And, you know, as I was teaching the class last night, you know, I'm teaching the class currently. So last night we were just discussing, you know, there's this $400 DVD player that I have that skips now. And I'm like, man, if we had just not spent that $400, we could have been out that much quicker, you know, putting our cruise for our honeymoon on a credit card because we just didn't know any better. That's what everybody else did. But yeah, everybody's got to start somewhere, and ours luckily wasn't too far in the hole. But you'd mentioned my numbers earlier, $68,000 in 22 months. During that time, we were making around $100,000 a year combined. And so, you know, that's our story. Not everybody's going to have that same story, same numbers, but you just do with it what you can. So go ahead.
That's awesome, man. What I actually do is we have the emergency, you know, the emergency fund, but also I'm kind of the guy that needs a little bit more cushion. I'm just not quite ready to completely let go of the reins. So I get paid personally one day a month, which is actually quite difficult when I was used to get paid every 2 weeks. When I was working for the state, at a couple of different universities. But what I do is I personally want, frankly, I want $500 in my checking account. That just is like oh crap money, because I'm sure this is a kids are watching. This is my oh crap money, and I want to make sure that I don't have any questions about running over. Like maybe I messed up on my budget just a little bit. So what I actually do is the day before payday, I get paid on the 25th of every month. The day before payday, every single dollar that's over $500 goes directly to my student loan. So I've paid off everything except for the student loan. So that's all I'm down to just that. I literally take every dollar, every penny past that. It goes directly to the student loan. So at 11 o'clock at night on the 24th, I have 500. So, if you ever wanted to come and rob me, I only got 500 bucks. So come get it. That's fine. I also got a 9mm. But that being said, the day before. So that's kind of my regimen, literally the day before. And I'm kind of excited about it. I'm excited because I know that I'm one more month away from that last payment. Like what Jeremy said, from that one last payment, I'm telling you, to get Sally Mae out of my house, my student loans is something I cannot wait for. So anyways, that's the debt snowball. Next up, he suggests to actually do 3 to 6 months of expenses into your savings. So basically what you do is now that your all your debts are paid for, in theory, you have a bundle of money that you were applying every month. And it could have been for years. It may have taken you years and years and years to pay off this to get this debt snowball to pay your debts down. But then you take that money and then you figure out what your 3 to 6 months of living expenses are. So whether that be your rent or your mortgage, your utilities, your gas, your everything that's in your budget, you figure that out, do that times three, and then you do it times six. So figure it out, how for 3 to 6 months of expenses. And honestly, the reason for that is what happens when the economy tanks? What happens when Rice decides to cut college athletics? Or I don't know. You guys are really smart. So I'm assuming they're going to make money in other ways. Rice is genius students. But that being said, what happens when we lose job? So, in theory, in 3 to 6 months, you should be able to find another job. So as long as you got a 3 to 6 month cushion, that then becomes basically your emergency fund. And then you're going to sit that off to the side.
For us, since we're a single income family, I have my wife and my three kids. We have 6 months worth of expenses, not 6 months worth of income. We're kind of building up to that as well, but 3 months worth of expenses. So she could pay the light bill. She could pay the mortgage. She could pay the water and all those things that have to be paid for 6 months if something were to happen to me for 5 months before she really had to be concerned with income. And, even at that, there's still more room in the budget we could take money from. So for some people, it's 3 months. Maybe you, Jared, you're, now a single guy. Maybe you just go to 3 months and then start investing heavily. But for us, personally, it was 6 months. So you kind of have to figure out what's best for your situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's some people that don't feel comfortable with 6 months. I mean, you do whatever is your comfort zone. I think I've heard Randy explain it many, many times about, if you feel comfortable with if 6 months of expenses just doesn't make you sleep well at night, then wait to really hardcore invest until you get to 9 months or whatever your number is to make you sleep at night.
So now, correct me if I'm wrong. I just want to make sure on this. That you're talking about doing that 3 to 6 months. So you've built your $1,000 emergency fund. Mm-hmm. You've now worked to paying off your whatever that debt is. This is after paying off that debt, or this is you should be working to that while you're paying that debt?
No, good question. No, you are going literally 100 miles an hour. You're the gazelle getting away from the lion during the debt snowball. So every single dollar is going. It is not budgeted to save yet. You're not to the point where you're saving that 3 to 6 months. You do the $1,000 emergency fund. So you had it right, $1,000 emergency fund, and then you go. Every single dollar goes to the snowball until the debt's gone. And then as long as this is all about discipline, really, because it's easy just to go. Well, I'm down to. I had $50,000 in debt, and I'm down to $5,000. let me just go ahead and start, man, I could really put 15% away for retirement. Or, hey, maybe I should talk to my buddy who's an investment planner, and he's really been pushing me to get these stocks. No, you're not there yet. I'm not there yet. I mean, I honestly, I was playing around with stocks throughout undergrad. And actually, I did relatively well just kind of playing around 50 bucks here, 50 bucks there. But I sold it all, and I put it to knock it down. Actually, I paid off two credit card bills just like that. But because my plan is to be disciplined with I've heard so many people that have been successful, and I do, Jeremy mentioned it, but I teach Financial Peace University as well. I've taught it. I've been a counselor for it, I guess, 3 times. So I've seen people from that are making way more money than I am. I mean, in hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars, that feel like they need to go through this Financial Peace University. Because they're not very good with their money, and they'll actually sit down, and you don't always have to do this, but you can sit down with that FPU counselor. And I got to see, I mean, the guy's bringing in 15 grand a month, which is like monopoly money to me. Let's go buy Park Place. But he's also spending $16,000 a month. It's just, you know, he's got $200,000-$300,000 worth of debt. Just because it just wasn't, he was letting the money drive him. He's not driving the money. So to go on a tangent, I'm kind of that rant guy.
So one of the things Dave says there, Sean, is that you get so focused, so intense, because you're scared. All you have is $1,000. You're scared that something is going to happen, and you're scared that you're not going to be able to take care of your finances. So with only $1,000 in emergency fund, you're scared enough to take action to kill that debt. Whereas with if you got 5 or 10 grand, you're like, well, it's okay. You know, I can take a little bit more time. But if you just get that $1,000, you kill all that debt, then you can build up that 3 to 6 to 9 months worth of emergency fund, and then you begin to invest. So that's the reason for that, because it keeps the fear in you.
Yep. It's kind of funny too, though, that the whole, like, I mean, and you hear this from other places is. And I've heard it all my life, is, well, you need to start investing now. You need to start saving now. You need to start, and you'll see it from my retirement benefits. I'm a benefits eligible employee that has a retirement. So that I get my monthly or my quarterly retirement thing, and they state, well, if we're only putting in $100 more, your retirement would look like, let's say, $2,300 a month instead of $2,100 a month. Yep. Or if you did $200, you would look more like $3,000 a month. So that's where I know me personally, I get worried, am I putting enough there in that retirement? Am I putting enough away in that thing? And then you're looking at not, almost.
Do you want to take that, Jeremy, or do you want me?
Yeah, the whole idea there is you delay the investments for a short time. So for us, it was 2 years, 22 months. And then we began the 6 months, and then so maybe for, let's even say, 3 years we were not investing anything, but now we are free to, because we can do whatever we want with our money. We don't owe anybody. If I lose my job, somebody's not going to come take my truck, take my TV, take my stuff, right? Because I own it all. And that's the reason, yes, we, if at all possible, the kids that I'm teaching in my class right now, they're 18, 19, and 20. There's 3 of them. And I'm like, one of them doesn't have any debt. And I'm like, if you can avoid debt your whole life, you're going to be a millionaire, right? And so just if you have debt, put everything else on hold, get rid of that debt, and then your money is yours and it doesn't belong to somebody else. So Dave wants you to begin investing as soon as possible, but with that, I guess, an asterisk being as soon as you're debt-free and possible.
Yeah, and even to take that just to even a step further, you know, if you're making, you know, 8 to 10% return, sorry, we're going to get into the weeds a little bit, but I mean, I enjoy this stuff. 8 to 10% return right now on your retirement, but if you have credit card bills, that's 26-28% interest. Well, what good is it that you're having to pay out? And I'm not saying that you're, you know, you have the express bill that's got 20% interest, whatnot, but I mean, even, you know, car payments.
Sean's pretty fashionable now. Don't get him wrong. Look at him. I mean, he's a very, very studly guy there, Jared. So don't, he's got a, he
no,
might have
a
an express
card. I get it. No, I understand that. He's making money on the side, and some of us can't do that. Agreed. So that being said, you know, I frankly am somewhat in the same dilemma, and I've gone through FPU and I've taught it a few times, but I'm in that same little predicament. So now I'm a part of a So at Ole Miss, we are part of the University of Mississippi employee, I guess peers, public employee retirement system. So they will automatically pull money from your, you know, from your account and automatically invest for you. Now you can also choose to add on up to a certain point. So that was automatically taken out. Same thing in Florida, actually, Florida health, retirement system. I can't do anything about that, and I don't know that I would have wanted to do anything about that. My situation now is they will match up to 4 to 6% at ACO Med Supply. They will match up to 4% of whatever I put in there. So I'm in that weird kind of position. I'm like, do I just go ahead and put, you know, whatever 4% is just so I can get the match to jumpstart me on my retirement? Or do I put that 4% and put down to my debt snowball? I actually chose to not do the match because I think every person has their own reasoning. I personally felt like I'm in this. I'm going both feet in. I want to be as aggressive as Jeremy. I want to go, you know, as hard as I can to get my debt paid off. And then 4% is a joke. I'm going to put 12 and 14 and 15%. You know, the whole 4% is nothing to me. Hopefully, if I stay disciplined, because then all my debt's paid off. I don't have to worry about the. Like right now, I'm at 6.5% interest on my student loan debt. Which is sitting at $18,000, I believe, is where I am. I thought about refinancing. Well, I'm not really going to be able to get that better of a rate, and it's not really worth it for me to do it. So let me just keep buckling down and buck up and just, you know, go 100 miles an hour. So that's kind of where I am. But yeah, everybody's in that situation where what's best for you. You know, these are just general guidelines, but I'm kind of the opinion I'm gonna just follow in the trail of the guy that I've seen so many, you know, millions and millions of people that have won. And I'm sorry if this has become a Dave Ramsey, you know, video podcast or whatnot, Jeremy, but I feel like it's that important. And I feel like if I would have known some of this stuff when I was an undergrad, I think I would have been a little bit more diligent in the way I was telling money where to go, not money telling me what to do. But anyway, so $1,000 emergency fund, debt snowball number two, 3 to 6 months of expenses or whatever your helps you sleep at night is. And then he suggests to take that money. So now you've got the 3 to 6 months expenses, and now that's off to the side. And that's literally basically sitting in your savings account that you can quickly access if you need to. You don't need to put it in a money market. You need to put in all this stuff. You don't really care about the interest. That is a security blanket. I'm not worried about generating revenue with that 3 to 6 months of expenses.
So let me jump in there real quick.
Yeah, please.
In September, our air conditioner went out. And so for some of you guys up there, maybe in North Carolina, it's getting decent temperatures, but it was still 90 plus degrees here in Houston in September when our air conditioner went out. And so had I had that money in the stock market or something like that, then it would have been a lot harder to get out. But it's just sitting there, that emergency fund and that money that we had saved up for home repair was just sitting in that account. So that $6,600 that I paid to have somebody fix my air conditioner, just, you know, you just pay for it and move on and that's it. You know, I don't owe somebody for it. He's like, well, we have payment options. So like, no, that's all right. I don't need that. So, you know, it was just that simple. I'm just, hey, all right, I'm going to pay for it. I'm going to move on. And that's it. Now I'll just build back up my emergency fund, build back up my home repair account and go from there. So it was that easy to access. And that's why it's important. Just like you said, it's just sitting there waiting to attack something that's trying to take you down.
That's exactly right. And even to kind of, before you even really get into the 15% range, you know, if like right now I have an amazing, I like to call her Honda Accord with 305,000 miles on it, and 2002 Honda Accord, and I did my own body work. So I mean, I took shop in high school, and it looks like it. But that being said, I also know that I'm going to need to look at getting a car pretty soon. I drive 1,000 miles a week. That's a great part of the job. I can assure you. That's a sarcasm. But $1,000 miles a week. I know that I need to budget for a new car, and my plan is to. I have no intentions on financing. I fully intend on fully funding a car, paying cash. I'm not buying the brand new car, the brand new truck. Yes, I would love to, and yes, there will be a day. Ramsey does, and I love his saying, "Live like no one else, so that later you can live and give like no one else." And right now, I'm living like no one else. We're not going on the big vacations and. Not doing all this and that when there's nothing wrong with that. I think that there's nothing wrong with you planning your entertainment budget. But as long as you have it budgeted, same thing as for me, I budgeted money each month that in my budget that is actually put aside that is going to be for my car. I budgeted, this is all in my budget. I've budgeted for gas. I budgeted for X amount of entertainment to go. So I'm dating now and to go to dinner, or we're going to go to, we're going out to the Ole Miss Mississippi State game in November. So, I've got money set aside for us to, either rent a car, or I don't know which kidney I'm going to sell, but fly out there for the game. So there's, you, as long as you are telling your money where to go, you are in control of it. So anyway, so then $1,000 emergency fund, debt snowball, 3 to 6 months expenses. And then now he talks about 15% of your household income into retirement. You could get as super nerdy as you want, but you have 401ks with a state, I guess it's a 403b. There's a bunch of different types. There's traditional IRAs and Roth IRAs and all this, whatever. Just that would be the time when you sit down with your financial, planner. Usually if you work for a state, they'll usually have someone that you can contact directly, usually for no fees, and you figure out what's good for you. They're all tax advantaged, which basically means that, or many of these are, where you can invest, say you're 15%, you're not having to pay your taxes at the time that you invest. You're actually going to be paying your taxes when you take the money out, which is in theory when you're 65 or older. So that's 15% there. If you have kids, start saving, baby step five, to start saving for your college fund for your kid, so that your child is not in the same situation that me as a child was, accumulating that debt. And I think what I'm excited about is that point in time is actually where I'm really looking forward to. I don't have any kids that I'm aware of. Of course, you're always nervous about the knock on the door. I'm kidding. I want to make, I want to change my family tree, and it's important to me. And I want to have kids. I want to instill the correct morals and values and all, which I got from my parents. I also want to make sure that I'm teaching them how to handle their money properly and how to earn it and how to save it and how to give it. So I think right at that point in time, when you're starting to save for your children's college fund, they got 529 college plans, and they've got a bunch of different education savings funds and all that are available through a lot of the states. That's baby step five. And then after you've done all that, you've paid your debt snowball, you've got money for the expenses off to the side, 15%, you've invested, you've started funding for your kid's college. Now let's attack the mortgage. We're taking that mortgage out. It says the new status symbol is paying off the home mortgage, not having the BMW in the driveway that's owned by the bank. I actually had a $170,000 house here in Greenville, North Carolina. It's 2,400 square feet. I downsized to after the divorce to a 1,400 square feet house, and my mortgage went from about $1,300 a month to $700. So I just gave myself a $600 pay raise. You have no clue how much I can sleep at night knowing that. But now I'm only having to pay off, $115,000 for that mortgage, which in theory, if I've got all this money that I'm applying to the debt snowball and all this other money, basically in theory going to accumulate, I want to knock off that mortgage ASAP. And then you're completely debt free, which I know, Jeremy, I feel like you're probably getting close on that. Is that right?
We have about 9 years left on our mortgage. We started off as a 30, and that was before Dave Ramsey. We refinanced to a 15-year, and so we've been paying a little bit extra here and there. It's like $5-$10, something like that. So it's not the, because we're trying to stay within the steps, trying to get to the 15%, and we also have three kids. Maybe they'll join the military or something, because I don't think I'm going to be able to save that much money for college. but... Yeah, so we're close. We're within 9 years, so hopefully by the time I'm 45, I'm completely debt-free, including the house, with plenty of money invested. Because like you were talking about, TRS is Teacher Retirement Service, or System of Texas, and we're part of that as well. It's basically our Social Security. So we're close.
That's awesome, man. That's once you get to the point where you're, like me, my mortgage is 700, it was 1200 at one time. When I have an extra $1,000, let's just say, just sitting in my pocket to do whatever it is that I feel like I want to do, whatever charity you want to give to, if you want to buy investment properties, if you want to do all this, you know, you're giving and you're building wealth, and then you're leaving that legacy for your family. That's basically what it all comes down to. And that's my motivation, personally. And that's basically the debt snowball. We hit a lot about that. Personally, what I use for budgeting, there's an app that I use. I use the Every Dollar app. If you get a chance to go and look it up, it's free. It just came out on Android as well just recently. I've got an iPhone. Every Dollar app is you can go online first, and then you basically set up. You say, how much do you make, and then how much is your mortgage, how much is your rent, how much is your utilities, how much is, and it separates all these different categories you really didn't even think about. And the goal is called a zero-based budget. So if you make $2,000 a month, then at the end of the month you should have $0 on your budget, because everything has a place. So I've actually got my budget down to the point where I'm accurate to within about 30 or 40 bucks a month. I've gotten it down, pretty narrowed down. So what'll happen is whenever, and I know Mint has one as well. Basically, whenever I buy gas, then I can go into my app on my phone and say I spent $42 in gas, and then it gets deducted. And it said, okay, so you have $300. Like I spend just short of $500 a month on gas. Using the $400 range. So it'll say you have $360 left over to budget. If you're coming up on the end of the month and you realize, hey man, you know what? I drove a lot more, you know, this month, or I had, the electric bill was through the roof because, you know, cause El Nino or whatever, I don't know. Then maybe you need to take some out of your entertainment budget, or maybe you need to take it out of this budget or that budget. But, that really allows me to stay focused and see exactly what's coming in and what's going out and what I'm applying, to what bill or whatnot.
All right, Sean, let's hear a little bit more about your story, your situation. So what are some of the things that you've taken or that you will move forward with?
Well, I mean, when me and her have talked about this a lot, I kind of fall in a funny thing, because I've got some stuff going on that most people would like. I bought a new truck. I guess it's going on 3 years ago, but I got it when it was like Dodge was having their zero interest, no paint, or zero interest as long as you pay it off in 7 years type situation. So I have no interest on my truck, which I know a lot of people on their car payments don't have that. And that's one of the questions that I have. Like, that's one of my main probably bills. I go with student, and then I would fall into that. I would fall personally into that car payment, truck payment. Outside of that, I pay off my credit card every month. I've only one time ever allowed my credit card to not be paid off for the month, because I don't use that as, well, if I don't have the money. I use that as I gain points on it, so I basically get free money out of it by utilizing it. And I know there are a lot of people that do that, but I know there are a lot of people that put too much on it. And the one time that I have not paid it off fully was sometime when I was actually taking a certification. I took my CrossFit certification and had to pay that money. Didn't have it all at one time, paid it off in that next month. But that's kind of where I'm at is, so what do you do? Do you take that truck and say, you know what, I'm going to downsize and I'm going to get rid of the truck and I'm going to go to a Toyota Corolla and go
on a cord like a joke, okay?
The smart car, something like that. No, I mean, so in that situation where, you know, I know I'm a kind of in a unique situation, but I mean, there's a lot of people that they've come out, and I know a lot of my friends, you know, that when we got out of undergrad and they went on to work, or we got out of grad school, you know, they were running on the same vehicle. My truck that I had when I got out of grad school had 360,000. It was or 370,000. It was 1-ton Dodge Dually. I needed a different vehicle. You know, it had a life on it. And there's a lot of people that do that. So they go and they buy that new vehicle. Is that something that we should like think about? Of hey, downsize that, or hey, get rid of that. Go for something real cheap. Go back to that old beater that, you know, to try and knock out that student loan debt. That would be a better avenue, or that would be something better to do.
All right, so definitely you're even though you got zero interest on the truck, you're paying for it. So whenever I bought my car brand new, it was for some reason I bought a brand new Volkswagen Jetta, And they're like, well, you know, we can give it to you for this price. And then the other salesman came in and said something about, well, 0% interest. He's like, oh, wait, we weren't supposed to tell them both. You know, when they looked at each other, they're like, oh, crap. And so they're either going to give you a better deal on the price or a better deal on the interest rate, one or the other. And so you're still paying for it. But the thing is your truck, I'm guessing your truck payments, I'm going to just say $450 a month. And that's $450 a month that you're sending out to somebody else that you're not using to pay off your school loans, that you're not using to do whatever you want with. And so what you'll hear Dave Ramsey say on the radio show a lot is, if you really like the truck and you can pay it off within 2 years, then keep the truck. If you're not absolutely in love with the truck, then downsize, get you something cheap, get it gone. If you're not really in love with it, then get rid of it, get rid of that debt, save up, pay cash for something else. He talks about if you save $450 a month for a year, then you can buy like a $6,000 vehicle. You save up another year, you can more or less, that $6,000 vehicle is probably still worth $5,000 or $6,000. And then so then you have another $5,000 or $6,000 to add to it. So over the course of 4 years, you're roughly about a $20,000 vehicle that's paid for in cash, and you're still saving up $5,000 to $6,000 a year to pay for that. So instead of paying for something that is going downhill, that is breaking, that is getting less in value, you're keeping your money so that you can do whatever you want with it, and you get to the vehicle is basically maintaining the same value, because a used car doesn't go down nearly as fast as a brand new car. So again, that's the advice from Dave Ramsey. So if you absolutely love the truck and you can pay it off in 2 years, then he would say keep it, and then, you know, do whatever you can to get rid of that payment.
Yeah, no, I would have never ever been the person to purchase a new truck. That was like not my, but it was one of those things where it was the truck that I had was, I needed to replace it. My brother-in-law works at a Dodge dealership, and he's like, hey, I can get it for you for this price. I can also still get you that discount on it. And, you know, it worked for me at the time. But as we have talked about this these steps, that's like my biggest question. So, and I know that a lot of people out there are in that situation because they went and bought a newer vehicle, or at least something with probably maybe not brand new, but within 2 years old.
Yeah. Well, I think that that's a look. I mean, I don't think that there's a wrong answer here at all. If you talk to Dave, I think he's Dave, like we're best friends. If you talk to Mr. Ramsey, I think that he's going to be very black and white, and he's going to say no. You know, cut the debt off at his head, and then, you know, deal with it from there. But I think even if the people, you know, that are getting the 2-3% interest, that's a great deal. You know, if you think about it, 2-3% interest on a car payment, that's considered a great deal. The question is going to be, how far out are you financing? Are you financing it 5 years, 6 years, 7 years? You know, you've got the people that have got the, you know, 72-month financing at 0% interest. What egg? I mean, how much car do you need? Now, that's not me in any way saying this about your specific situation. I think with a lot of people that have, you know, the 2-3-5% interest, or some that are certainly in a 9%, which is asinine for you to have to ask permission and you have to pay to use your own money. It's just crazy talk. If you ask them to see your amortization chart, which is, you know, we're going to do 6 years of payment at 3% interest. How much is this car going to cost me 5 years down the road? And you can easily put that in. There's a bankrate.com has a great calculator, but you can figure out exactly how much it's going to cost. Like for that $20,000 or $30,000 car, is that $30,000 car actually going to cost you $45,000 by the time you're done? So, like every situation's different. I had an F-150 and I loved it. There is no way though I could do what I'm doing, driving 1,000 miles a week with getting 15 miles a gallon. Love my truck. Upset, still hurts my heart. Cobalt blue is exactly what the big truck I always wanted. Well, you know, with me doing the career change, that was the right move for me. I did sell it. I took a loss on it, but it was the loss that I took on it was worth it way out. And, you know, going back and looking at it, it's a lot more worth it than I thought. Cause I ended up buying this car for, you know, in cash. Now, of course, it's a 2002 Accord, and not everybody necessarily wants to be driving that and, you know, dragging your butt on the ground when you're driving. That's, you know, that's not exactly my idea of a pimp mobile, but but it worked for me, and it's what I need right now. And if it can help me take that $300-$400 a month that I was, you know, would put towards a car, I think really it's I think rich people. Robert Kiyosaki is another guy I like to read, but Rich Dad Poor Dad is his book. But they don't look to see what the payments are; they look to see what the cost is. So what's the cost? Just and this isn't, like I said, in no way directed at you, Sean. I don't mean it like this, but if we as a population can look to see how much the end result and the end cost is going to be for this vehicle or for this purse or for these shoes or for whatever it is, what's it worth to my family for me to be able to delay a little bit and live like no one else? Maybe me stay in my little junker and then, but save some money towards me buying cash for a car. You know, maybe I need to kind of baby step it up, you know, in vehicles over time. But I don't know. I think if we can look at ultimately the ultimate cost of a vehicle, and, you know, can we buy a used one for 10 grand less? And you know, I'm not saying, you know, every situation is different, but that's a tough one, man. Everybody's, that's a real life example. Everybody's doing it.
So, and then I guess another thought that I would think is, when you do have investments and or you have placed investments or you, or even you, you know, I've put away a small savings account, I guess, to say, this is my incidental money that, you know, might be over the $1,000. Should you take that? Should you basically pull all those investments? Should you pull that money out? And should you say, hey, I'm going to go all the way in with paying back my, you know, my student loans, my car payment, my whatever, or just leave that there since it's already there and you've already built that, you've got it there. What should you do with that?
You should leave that there, leave it where it is, and then go. So those investments, if you take them out, you're going to have to pay a penalty and you're losing the interest that they're gaining. So for the most part, you're going to leave them there. Now, you do, would definitely need to speak with like a competent financial advisor. And again, I'm not a financial advisor. So if you really are interested in doing that, then speak with a competent financial advisor about running the numbers. You know, if I have $50,000 in investments, but $20,000 in debt, can I take out $20,000 or, you know, $30,000, whatever it is with the penalty? And does that make sense for me? And so for the most part, you just stop investing, pour all your current resources in towards that. The reason we paid off that debt in March of 2010 was because we finally did get rid of that last little bit of extra that we had over the $1,000. And then we were able to kill that and then have enough plenty of time to build up the emergency fund before our son was born. So I would not recommend just getting rid of all of your current investments because of the tax liability. And then there's always a tax bill that comes with that at the end, as we realized, as one time we sold mutual funds to pay off a credit card, and then $750 later, or tax bill later, we're like, well, that was stupid. Do we get rid of that mutual fund to pay off the tax bill? I mean, just to pay off the credit card, just to have another bill that we couldn't pay. So I think my advice there is speak with a competent tax professional, but for the most part, I think you'd be okay with stopping the investments, pouring all your resources into getting out of debt, saving up the emergency fund, and then you begin the process of investing. Jared, any other thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with that. As long as we're talking about your retirement plans, if you're talking about money that you went on sharebuilder.com, which is how I personally was playing around with like Capital One, stuff like that, you can, you know, day trading and stuff, that is not part of that tax deferred. That would be the situation where I went all in. I sold it all. That was what I'd kind of been playing around with since college. So I think what Jeremy was referring to, which is 100% correct, your retirement plan that is like a tax deferred IRA or mutual fund or whatever. You're going to get pegged. I think 25% is what your tax penalty is on top of whatever your tax rate is. So right now, if I'm a 15%, I don't know exactly. Say I'm 10 to 15% is my tax rate, my income tax rate, and then I pull out of my Florida retirement account from when I worked at FAU, then I'm now about to get pegged. 35% is going to be my fee. So certainly never touch that. If you're talking about extra money, you can like play money that you kind of messed around with, which is what I had. Some people choose not to sell that. I'll tell you, I'm all in, baby. I want to get out. This is important to me, and I'm both feet in. So that's, we're basically talking about the same thing, but just making sure we're having the same conversation. The IRAs, yeah, I 100% agree with Jeremy. You do not touch that until it's time to retire. But yeah, if it's play money that you've kind of been throwing around stocks and kind of playing around with yourself, sell it, baby. Put it to a debt. Put it to whatever is at the top of your debt snowball.
All right. So let's kind of bring this to a close here and just talk about some of the victories that we've had. So I've talked about we paid off $68,000 in 22 months. I didn't talk about, though, that the 2002 Honda Pilot, I mean, the 2002 Honda CRV that I drive and the 2003 Honda Pilot that my wife drives, both of them around 100,000, 120,000 miles, but they're both paid for in cash. We bought them for cash. We paid for them in cash. And so we don't owe anything on those. So we have those there. Obviously, our house, I've talked about that. We've also been able to take vacations. I wrote a grant and for Fun for Teachers, which I've spoken about on previous shows, and we were able to take a trip to Florida for like 15 days. They paid like $5,000 of that so I could do some professional development. But then I paid some other money so we could spend extra time there, go to the parks and that kind of thing. But because we had a budget, we had money, we left that all there. We didn't bring that back home with us. This summer, I took Sarah to San Francisco for our anniversary. We couldn't do anything for our 10th anniversary because she was still nursing our youngest. So for our 11th, we were able to get away for a couple of days. And again, all that stayed there. We paid for it beforehand. We didn't owe any debts. And also last summer, we were able to go up to Northeastern University and meet Mike McKinney up in Boston. So I took the whole family up to Boston the 4th of July. So it's not like I'm just saving and putting all this money in the bank and never using any of it. This weekend, I'm planning on taking my boys camping. So, you know, that's another 100, 200 bucks, whatever it is for food and travel. I use the money, but now I have that money in a category. I have it in vacation. I have it in airfare. I have it in car repair, that kind of thing. So those are just some of the victories that we've had as a family. And obviously, Sarah not having to go to work as a teacher, being able to stay home full time with the kids is the greatest advantage for us as far as not having debt, not having to pay anything extra other than the house. So Jared, what are some of the victories that you have had?
Well, I'll mention about mine, but my personal favorite victory, I have a chance to go to see a lot of different, so now I'm a sales guy, right? So I go to different doctor's offices, meet different medical assistants and realize that, you know, whether you're an athletic trainer or medical assistant or RN or whatever, or the mechanic, we all are in the same boat. And they are all, you know, I've got within the last month, I've had some medical assistants that I've sat down with literally like in the break room at the orthopedic clinic and sat down and written out their debt snowball. They would literally bring me their bills and we're writing out a debt snowball. And, you know, I'll get a Facebook message. Oh my gosh, Jared, hey, I just got my emergency fund. Or, hey, Jared, I just paid off all my credit cards. And those, honest to goodness, I'd like to think that everybody has a giving heart. And I think ultimately, I think I feel best when I can give. So my personal favorite victory so far has been two medical assistants within the last month or so that have told me that they've paid off all their credit card debt and now they're attacking the next one. And personally, though, I had a lot going on, as I've mentioned in the past year. I said that I left college athletics to move closer to home when my mom did pass away in August a year ago. And then after that, my aunt passed away a few months after that. A few months after that, my wife and I separated. So it's been a pretty rough year. But I'm a God guy. It's unfortunately my mom can now see how much I drink and cuss, but I also pray a lot too. So that's my personal Trinity, I like to call it. But that being said, between my wife and I, we were able to pay off just short of 50 grand in 3 years. And then, in that amount of time, I had to pay for a divorce. We had to fix the house up to get it sold. And then took that money to buy my new house, that I've got some repairs. It's a little bit older house, had to get some repairs. So I'm currently sitting at around 18 grand, and in a perfect world, I'm shooting for having it all completely paid off in a year. That's my plan. And you guys will hold me accountable, I guess, in October, and was it October the 18th, you know, 2017. Get back on the phone. Hopefully, I'll be completely debt free as far as that goes, and start attacking, you know, my emergency fund. But my personal victory is helping other people. I saw him, Ramsey, through a friend of mine who invited me to Financial Peace University, and I've now paid for a couple of people to go through FPU. and sent him a book for Total Money Makeover, and sent him that for Christmas. I'm that guy. I'm sorry, you're not going to get a fun gift. You're going to get this crummy book, but you read it, it'll change your life.
So on that note, Sean, if you take Financial Peace University and graduate by the time this airs, let me see. When do you quit football? When does football end the season?
Oh, we are done, I believe, the last week of November.
The last week of November. So sometime right after that, if you start with Financial Peace University, when you graduate, you show me the graduation diploma, then I will pay for it for you. Me personally, I will pay for it. All right. So if you graduate from Financial Peace University and show me the diploma, and it's got to be before summer of 2017, okay, then I will give you that. It's $93. So I'll give you that $100 back because I think it's $7 shipping. All right. So if you graduate, I'll pay for it.
I'll pick up your girlfriend. Nothing weird. I'm saying. I'll jump in on that too.
All right. So Jared just said he'll pay for your girlfriend to go through it once you graduate. Show us the certificate, and I'll pay for yours because I really believe in it. It's that good. So this is what you can do whenever you have a budget, whenever you have a plan, you can give to other people. So on that note, my favorite recommendation for people who are struggling with money, for athletic trainers who may not be making as much money as me, check out Financial Peace University from Dave Ramsey. So daveramsey.com, and then you'll click on find a class and go from there. I have a link to that in the show notes. Again, this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/personalfinance. This is Jared Plumer, Plummer. I'm sorry. I did that right. Jared Plummer. And he's also a huge fan of Dave Ramsey. So daveramsey.com is going to be the best place to go for all those tools and just get yourself out of debt. So I also have in the show notes an Excel sheet that I use. It's actually a Google Doc sheet that I use for budgeting. It's pretty complex when you go through the course. I'll talk about nerds and free spirits, and that is definitely a nerdy spreadsheet. You can check that out. But don't be afraid to reach out to Jared and ask him questions. Reach out to me and ask me questions. So on that note, Jared, how's somebody going to get a hold of you?
Yeah, so I love it. I'm a big Facebooker. So it's Jared, J-A-R-E-D, Plummer, P-L-U-M-M-E-R. I am on Twitter. I'm sorry to be that guy. It's at Taping Pirates, because I'm a pirate, ECU by God. I don't mind at all. If somebody wants to reach out to me, they can shoot me an email at jared.plummer@gmail.com. jared.plummer.com.
All right, Sean. If somebody wants to get a hold of you, find out a little bit more about your journey, or just encourage you, what's the best way to do that?
str3@rice.edu. I'm on Twitter, Sean Reedy, R-E-A-D-Y, @_ATC.
All right, and I am Mr. Jeremy Jackson on Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat, those kind of things. So you can find me there. It's MrJeremyJackson, Mr. Jeremy Jackson. This is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/personalfinance. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/personalfinance. And on sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, you'll find the links to connect with me or anything like that. So for Jeremy, Jared, and Sean, that is a wrap.
Yeah, thanks for your opportunity. Look forward to seeing everyone to succeed as an athletic trainer in life and in career.
Here's just a little bit of the pre-show conversation between Jared and Sean.
But yeah, so I worked at Ole Miss. I was a football athletic trainer at Ole Miss, Florida Atlantic, University of Maryland. Okay. After I left grad school in Louisiana.
When were you at Ole Miss?
09 to 12.
Okay.
We won a Cotton Bowl. I guess we did a Cotton Bowl, and we never played Rice, I'm aware.
I think, let's see, Ray Leisinger. I went to undergrad with him.
So Ray took over me when I left.
For your position? Okay.
Yeah, my position, yeah.
That was what I was going to say. Probably, he was probably right there after you.
Exactly right. Yep. He's the guy there now. I loved it there. It's cool. Cool job. Mom had some health issues, so that's how I became a sales guy. It's all good. I'm now the guy I used to joke on.
No, that's understandable. That's understandable.
That's cool, though. I enjoy it. Whatever. I'll make a change. I'm going to get the Disney play, Magic Castle play pool. I'm going to make this a little bit lower. There we go. All right.
it's a solid choice for on the road ice tubs if you need it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The Disney Magic Castle play pool. I've got quite a bit of my offensive line, and actually mainly my DBs. I felt like would be perfect for those.
I helped host the NCAA Final Four here as basically the guest host for those athletic trainers that came in. And so in every one of their locker rooms this year, we ended up putting in pools. And when I talked to them about it, I think the NCAA was thinking that I was going to be getting I was like, well, I'll use the Rubbermaid ones. But then I was like, well, the blow up ones will be so much better because you'll be able to get more people in there. And they started like looking at me, and I think they were expecting me to come in with like these hot pink princess pools or something like that. So
Princess Tiara and Cinderella.